Deri Domine Maris undi soni, Titanis mitigis qualique soni, te unies favori modulis venerando finis, se iubeos plagitas variis liberare manis.
Nobilis, humilis, magne martir stabilis, habilis, comes venerabilis, et tutor laudabilis tuos subditos, serva carnis fragilis mole possitos.
Hi, I'm Stan Brackage. I suppose most people's sense of hearing actual sounds mixed with musical instruments comes from Respighi's The Pines of Rome. At least that was the most famous, often played symphonic piece of my generation that used sounds within it, bird sounds. In the section of it called Catacombs, Respighi definitely attempts to create the sense of a nightingale singing, and then, almost to contrast with his accomplishment of creating this with musical instruments, he falls back on ordinary bird sound, which is almost always reproduced with this little simple child's toy that you turn and creates that kind of noise. Anyway, here's a little section of it to refresh your memory. So on to the Appian Way, which is the next section of that piece of music. Clear back in the history of music, I suppose occasionally some actual noisemakers been brought in. In fact, in a way you can say that every instrument that was brought in was a noisemaker, back to the beginning of beating on a hollow log or the chest itself to express the beat of the inner heart. So that all of music really is that kind of sympathetic magic. But once musical instruments get established, they tend to try to separate themselves from the ordinary usages of their sound and to express something else. The greatest composer to make a shift in this, I think, in the last 100 years is Claude Debussy. He didn't use actual noise-making instruments to create their own sounds, but he used, in this next piece I'm going to play, the piano, to try to make it give a sense of the wind, almost as if to say this percussion instrument can dance with the wind. The piece is called The Wind on the Plain, No. 3. And again, as I like to do, I'm playing the Edwin Welt piano recorded in the Keyboard Immortal Classic series so that we can hear how Debussy himself played it. And this is a recreation of his own sound. I mean, however wonderful Gieseking's performance of Debussy is, and I think it is wonderful, it's far too sharp and clear to be expressive of what the composer intended. Debussy, as you can hear for yourself on this recording, wanted a kind of mushiness. The piano's reaching out toward the wind without becoming it. The Wind on the Plain, Claude Debussy playing. I really like that, you know. I like that kind of music. I like that sense of the arts. I'm, for instance, always very nervous with paintings that try to look like windows. I mean, what's the purpose? Rather have a window. Painters who sign their paintings on the back so that there'd be no sense of nothing between the viewer and his imagining. This was a hole in the wall. I like painters to sign boldly on the front in some way that says, this is a painting. There have always been those two drives in the arts. I mean, there was a famous Greek sculptor whose paintings of grapes were supposed to be so great that the birds flew down and pecked on them. I just don't think that's good for the birds, and I know it's not good for the painting, and I don't see the point. I love a music that reaches out toward an actual sound, but keeps its own integrity and is a piano piece. But what about that area between the sound itself and the musical instrument, which is a sounder controlled by humans? Well, that area, I think, might be, for some people, the area of the gods or the spirits. Certainly it is for Henry Cowell. He completely changes the whole inside of a piano and the entire way you would play it, that is, playing on it more like a harp than on the keys, in order to create a spirit sense, the spirit of the banshee. But then, why do I go on talking about it? American composer Henry Cowell, on this Folkways record, speaks about his piece of music himself, and then he'll immediately play it. Henry Cowell.
The Banshee is an Irish family ghost, a woman of the inner world, the word means, and she will be an ancestor of yours who is charged with the duty of taking your soul into the inner world when you die. So when you die, she has to come to the outer plane for this purpose, but she finds the outer plane very uncomfortable and unpleasant, so you will hear her wailing at the time of a death in your family, while she's there for the purpose of taking your soul back into the inner world, or whatever member of the family it might be. On the banshee, the sounds are obtained by the player standing at the back of the piano with the pedal open, and the coils on the lower bass strings are played on horizontally. if the piano is in tune, this will produce a very eerie sound, roughly 4 octaves above the keyboard sound, with a strange tone quality of its own, and with the possibility of wailing sounds, which will be heard. There are, of course, many slight variations in the method of producing this, all of which are given in the printed music, which finally was accomplished triumphantly after a great many trials and errors in ways in which these curious sounds might be notated.
I think that area between the sound made and the musical instrument played, where, as I said, I think gods dance, demons, angels, ghosts, things of the spirit, or what we ordinarily call things of the imagination in this presumptuous time, is the richest land for the arts. I think it's home base for the arts, really. I mean, people have so much trouble deciding between the terms actuality and imagination. And I think this in-between area is just where the artist manages to make actuality through his or her imagination reality for everyone else. I love that story of the painter Whistler who... Some young lady commented to him, "Isn't the sunset beautiful?" And he immediately replied, "Yes, nature is catching up." What he really meant, of course, was that she wasn't aware that it was centuries of people painting sunsets that made her or any human being aware of it, maybe, at all. I never knew Henry Cowell. I always wished I had. I hear he's one of the sweetest men in the world. But a close friend of his was my mentor, Edgard Varèse, and I've played a lot of his music on these programs. I'm going to play the only piece of Deserts, the interpolation, that he made while sitting out his exile in Death Valley, USA. Sitting in that desert all those years like an ancient saint, listening and not trying to repeat the sounds of the desert, but, as you'll hear on this, the very first of the tape interpolations, which he dreamed up long before there was a tape machine, trying to, again, reach to that in-between area and dance with the sense of the desert with whatever recorded sounds from elsewhere he could bring to it. And just so that you don't think that avant-garde and largely unknown American composers, Vrez actually, France, but living most of his life here, that these art composers who are well known by the art crowd but not by most of the rest of the folks, just so you don't think that they haven't been an influence, I want to play you just a little bit of a piece from The Grateful Dead. It's from That's It for the Other One, an album called Anthem of the Sun. And my understanding is that it's the bass player, Phil Lesh, who had studied classical music and who had become involved in Vrez and Henry Cowell and many other people, John Cage, of this great era of concert music making, but also that Jerry Garcia, though his background is folk and bluegrass, as the leader of this group, also took a tremendous interest in it. Here's just a little example. Well, I just give a little piece of that because, I mean, I have to say, frankly, I find it pretty, it's too improvisational for my interests. But still, I mean, I think it's wonderful that they've been so influenced. And who knows about all these divisions we create. And we're all heading somewhere, and in our various ways we'll get there, presumably. I want to close today's program with an extraordinary piece that's very, very inspired by Vrez and Charles Ives. Malcolm Goldstein's The Seasons, Vermont. And this actually has been produced on a Folkways recording very recently. But the Folkways recording of it, a record of it, is totally different than the tape piece section I'm going to play for you, which Malcolm sent me several years ago. I've never met Malcolm, but we've corresponded quite a lot over the years because there's a strong relationship between his music and my filmmaking. And I don't know how to characterize that for you better maybe than to quote William Carlos Williams' dictum, quote, "No ideas but in things." End quote. There'll never be two performances alike of this Seasons, Vermont by Malcolm Goldstein because of the way it's set up and notated. But it is a group of instrumentalists playing in relationship to sounds. I couldn't even find on this original tape where Malcolm's spring begins because it's kind of mushed into winter, as it should be. The seasons all together. They're quite separated out neatly on the Folkways record. But anyway, we're starting somewhere in the beginning of spring, and you can hear the frogs croaking, people's windows are beginning to open, house cleaning is starting, people are beginning to fuss, bands begin marching down the streets and go by, the birds are singing, and of course there's very much of water and building and rejuvenation, and here it is.
Thank you.
Well, we didn't quite get all the way through Malcolm Goldstein's Spring, but that'll just make it that much more a unique spring. And then we end, as usual, with the father of all this kind of music in America, Charles Ives' Remembrance.